Hi, this is Brian Hurley. For the third podcast, I'd like to share a presentation we gave at the Association of Oregon Recyclers Conference. It was on March 21st, 2018. This is a presentation at a reuse forum that they worked, had presenters from different reuse organizations like Free Geek and Rebuilding Center, both organizations and nonprofits that we've been working with as part of Lean Portland and our Lean consulting work. The speakers are myself, Brian Hurley, Matt Horvat, our founder, and also from the two organizations, John Ashcraft from Free Geek, who'll be talking about just starting through their lean journey and the daily management systems that they're trying to put together. And you'll also hear from Mike Alfani from the Rebuilding Center, who's talking about some of the work he's done in the past with donation process for hardware. So I hope you'll enjoy. It's a little lengthy. There is a video available on our website that we'll post. You can actually watch the presentation and the slides, but I thought you'd like to hear the audio as well. It's pretty helpful and useful. Thanks, enjoy.
So our first group are Matt Horvath and Brian Hurley. So Brian and I actually got to know each other during my Republic days. I'm really excited to have both of you, and I'll let you introduce yourselves, but they're going to be talking about applying lean principles to reuse. So come on up.
Hey, thanks everyone. I'm Brian Hurley. I run a consulting firm, Business Performance Improvement. I'm also president of Recycling Advocates, and just wanted to, really excited about this opportunity to share some of the work we've been doing as part of Lean Portland with some of the reuse organizations here. And so I'll have Matt talk about Lean Portland real quick, and then I'll have John, or I'll go into a little bit on Lean itself for a couple minutes, and then I'll have John talk about Free Geek and have Mike talk about Rebuilding Center. Thank
you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for having us here. So Lean Portland is a benefit organization, triple bottom line, right? Social, environmental, and profit motivations, and we haven't quite figured out the profit motivations yet, but we do like to give away our consulting services, so it's kind of a pro bono consulting thing. It started out actually just as a happy hour. If you guys ever tried to change the culture in your organization, you know it takes a lot of teamwork. And most of us that are in Lean Portland are internal consultants for different companies. And we kind of got together and started doing volunteer projects. And as of last year, we were getting to be about as big as we can handle, totally volunteer run with no income stream at all. But it's been a lot of fun. Have had a chance to meet some really neat people and do some fun projects on the ground, and that's what you're gonna hear about today. And so here's kind of the core team that meets about every other week to plan our events and have our conversations. Most of us were trained by like Fortune 500 companies, and some of us are still working full time. Some of us have quit our jobs and gone into consulting professionally. And we're kind of like project managers and process improvement people who've studied a lot of frameworks on how to do teamwork and leadership development. So we do training, and then a lot of it's just roll up your sleeves and go see how the work's actually done and teach people some tools, mostly sticky notes, to figure out how to make stuff better. And that's kind of what we're all about. So that's the intro to the organization. Now you hear from Brian.
Thanks, Matt. So how many of you understand or could talk briefly about lean principles or lean manufacturing concepts? A few of you? Okay, great. So I'll do a little bit of explanation on that just so everyone's on the same page here. So the term lean is probably not the greatest word they could have come up with. A lot of people think about that as, well, I have to have a minimum number of people, and it has nothing to do with the number of people. You could have a one-person organization that's very inefficient, and you could have a 100-person organization that's very streamlined and running very smoothly. So it's not about how many people you have, it's how you're utilizing the people to do the work. And so it was a concept that they came up with studying Toyota and some other Japanese companies. And what they observed is they ran things very smoothly, and it wasn't chaotic, and it was very streamlined, and things happened in an orderly fashion, and they met their schedules fairly consistently. And what they learned is that they learned that from the US manufacturers back in the 1900s, 1920s, 1940s, and somehow we lost the recipe, and they picked it up and expanded beyond that and took it to another level. And so last couple decades, people have been trying to figure out how do we match what they're doing. And so that's where a lot of the training Matt talked about is where we got the background and knowledge on this. So it's about engaging your employees. I kind of think about it as more as an engagement activity than a productivity program. It's how do you engage the ideas out of the people? I think Forrest brought that up today too. He talked about how do we get ideas and engage them in solving problems and being innovative. And you can't do that by just dictating and saying you should do it this way because I think I'm the boss or I'm the manager and that's the best way to do it. So we want to have people be flexible, learn new skills, learn new tasks, change their work around so they're not doing the same thing over and over again, and that gives them new ideas. And we're trying to use those people to free them up by not doing tasks that they shouldn't be doing. It's not about working faster or harder, it's about stop doing the stuff that your customers don't care about. And to understand that, you have to go talk to your customers and find out what they actually care about. And sometimes we assume or we think we know what they want and then we're surprised. So if you can free people up to be able to do and provide more value of what the customers really want, that's how you can grow and succeed in your organization. So Toyota has a couple pillars that they utilize. Two is, first one is continuous improvement. And a lot of the tools around Lean are set up to force problems to the surface. And if you don't like to deal with problems, then you probably don't want to embark on a lean journey because you will find out that you have way more problems than you realized. And some of the feedback we get is, I didn't have all these problems till we started doing this lean stuff. We just say, no, they were there, you just hit them and you didn't see them. And so that's a little eye-opening for people when they get exposed to a lot of those issues. And now you got a lot of things to manage, but at least they're all on the surface. And you can decide, we'll start with this one, and then this one, and this one. So it's a quest for perfection. And those tools kind of force you to deal with those problems and not hide them away. The other piece that's really cool was respect for humanity. It's how do you take the ideas from the people who do the work and have the respect for them to ask for their input and not tell them what to do. And so we go to where the work's being done and talk to the people doing the work. We're not experts on that. We have ideas around that, but at the end of the day, they have to live with those suggestions. So it needs to be their ideas. And so hopefully you'll hear some of that from John and Mike about the experiences there. And we also want to think about not making improvements that make my job easier. It's what's going to be best for the customer and everybody in the process. So we don't optimize my work at the expense of the next person who receives my work. It's how does everybody run an efficient process, and that includes all departments in your organization. And that can be hard to coordinate, but sometimes we do things inefficiently for us in order to make the whole organization run smoothly. And that's a different concept for people to understand. And the way we look for opportunities is by identifying something called 8 forms of waste. And so when you see transportation, things are moving around, that means it takes time to go from one spot to another, and the customer means they're waiting during that time. When we see inventory backed up, that's where we look for problems. Why is the inventory here? What can we do to get it down? That means something started and we're not finished with it yet. We have motion. I'm looking for tools. I'm looking for things. Where's that next order? Where's the paperwork at? That's time wasted from your customer perspective. Or waiting for approvals or waiting for decisions to be made. Your customers are the ones who end up waiting. Doing things more than necessary. So maybe you're providing some value to your customers, but it's more than what they want, and it's overdoing it. And that's time you could be doing something more valuable that they do want you to do. Or working ahead and trying to get ahead of something and then finding out later they don't actually want that, or they did change their mind on something. Or making mistakes or errors. And finally, not utilizing or listening to your employees. That's another form of waste. Or not giving them opportunities to succeed or get their ideas heard or get challenged with new tasks or activities. So that's a lot to cover in a couple minutes, but as part of our group, we also do free workshops at Hatch Labs. So we have some dates coming up. Usually about once a month, we put on these different topics around Lean and Six Sigma and collaborative culture and behavior changes. So feel free to sign up and check those out. They're about 2 or 3 hours a piece. And you can go to leanportland.com to learn more. With that, I hand it off to John.
Thank
Thank you. So some of you have heard about FreeBeak before, but we're a nonprofit that takes in electronics and we focus on reuse and then we recycle what we can't reuse. We take in about 1 million pounds of e-waste every year. Hopefully we can reuse about 1/3 of that by weight. We're giving refurbished computers back out to other nonprofits for free. Our volunteers can earn a computer. We also have a program with the City of Portland students. Basically, any student can volunteer at any of these other organizations and get credit towards a free computer at FreeGeek. Volunteer 24 hours, do the paperwork, you're eligible for a free computer. Kind of trying to solve the digital divide, providing access not only to the hardware, but also the training you need to use the hardware is a lot of our focus. And we have free classes as well. And we've been doing this for 18 years, and we've had well over 100, maybe as many as 200 employees, each adding their little bit of innovation over time. And sometimes we slip back, and sometimes we solve the same problem 5 times. I just have some examples here. On the top right is our advanced recycling work area. There's a dozen little bins there, so you can stand in one spot. You have 5 bins for aluminum, 3 bins for cords. Basically, everything you might sort out of a bin or deconstruct out of an advanced thing, you have a spot within reach to put the stuff. So we're trying to minimize how far you walk, how much you have to turn and twist. And the bins are a little bit ergonomic. And then as those bins fill, then you put them on a cart and you take them and dump them in the giant bins. Here on the bottom left, we've got our gloves. We get as many as 2 dozen volunteers just in our recycling area every day, and we want to make sure they each have a clean pair of gloves. So we give them a name tag and a place to store these gloves. Some of them never come back, and we need a system in place to make sure that we're cycling through those, reclaiming the gloves and name tags. So every month we pull down 1 of the 2 walls, we wash the gloves, we reset the name tags, and it's been flowing pretty smoothly. Circuit boards, I don't know how well you can see the picture, but we need to sort circuit boards in a way that our downstream vendors appreciate, so they pay us the right value. And it's pretty complicated. It takes a lot of learning, and we're training new interns all the time. So the way I learned was I asked my boss at least 200 times, what about this one? What about this one? Sometimes I'd even get different answers, and I'd try to make an average in my brain. So now we have a visual learning board where you can see the thing, compare it to the board, and say, all right, well, that's like these. That's a mid-grade board. And the last one in the corner is the line leading away from our front desk. Our building, like a lot of buildings, is kind of like a maze, and we get dozens of new people in the building every day. So we put lines down on the floor so the front desk can say, follow the pink line to the desktop reuse area, the black line to the classroom, and a blue line will lead you to a bathroom in any direction. And these are just tools that we've developed on our own to help make life easier through kind of continual improvement, a lot of people adding their ideas. Last year we started working with Lean Portland, and that's been a more kind of structured way to look at some of these things. How do we identify the Tim Woods sort of waste ideas? How do we kind of adapt our culture in an intentional way to identify problems as opportunities and to really work on making improvements intentionally? We sat down and we did a charter, and we agreed that the thing that mattered most to us that we should focus our energy on is doubling the number of laptops we can produce in a month. And you can't read our values up there, but we've been deliberate about, you know, we want to make sure that we're providing meaningful opportunities, a good volunteer experience, some education. So with our goal, we sat down with the Lean team and made some kind of restrictions on what we meant with that goal. We want to double the laptops we're producing without adding additional staff resources, because the people in that room didn't have the opportunity to say, well, just double our budget and solve the problem that way. We wanted to make sure that we were doing it without creating a factory work environment. Not that factories are bad, but it kind of goes to, we don't want staff to feel like their job is just a totally different job and it's terrible and boring now. And we don't want to take away the education opportunities either. We might have to shift them and what we're teaching people to match our new processes, but we don't want to say, come volunteer with us, learn this one thing, don't grow as an individual, and don't get the free geek experience. And in general. We just didn't want to negatively impact the customer, staff, or volunteer satisfaction. We didn't want quality to go down. We didn't want our volunteers to leave us because the culture had broken. But with all those in place, we saw a path to doubling the laptops that we could produce. One of the tools we used, Maria from Lean Portland helped lead this, was value stream mapping. Again, focusing just on laptops, we put up a big board with a bunch of sticky notes, and we labeled every place or process where a laptop would flow through the building or get handled by a staff member. So we identified dozens of these things, and it was useful to see like where are staff spending their time and how much time each laptop takes, and how much time a laptop might sit in a specific area. And this was really surprising to us. You know, we kind of knew that it was maybe taking a little longer than we hoped, but to learn that, you know, some laptops might actually be in the building for more than a year before they got processed, just because that shelf, you know, there's too much inventory in this one area and it's not turning over quick enough. Or that, oh, actually we're spending 45 minutes on each laptop just to test the battery, and maybe there are ways there to kind of focus our efforts, cut down 10 or 15 minutes with just a small process change. So that is very helpful for getting kind of a baseline of where we were currently and setting priorities for what are the easy things to change first. One thing we've kind of continually talked about in Lean is how do we lock in the improvements? Because, you know, like I said, we've been doing this for 18 years. Everybody's got a change to make. You know, it's easy to sort the bin, you know, streamline the process, but how do you make sure that you're not doing that again next month? So I have here, as a picture and example, you can see in the middle there's just a big bin of miscellaneous tools. This is back in our advanced recycling area. We've always had that bin of tools, and then you kind of dig for the one you want and hopefully you find it, and hopefully it's not missing. But over the last 6 months or so, our staff member Daryl built these things. You can see in the top right, there's a shelf just for screwdrivers. They're each labeled. Each screwdriver is color-coded on the shaft, so you can tell in an instant, you know, you remember where the tool you need is, but if it's missing, you know it's missing. And if you find it somewhere else in the building, you see, well, that's the pink tool that should be back in this area. And the same thing with the drill bits down below. You can see that they're all green and all the slots are filled. And that just saves us so much time trying to find the tool, trying to replace the tool. And so this sort of system helps to kind of sustain the improvements so that you don't have to resort all your tools every month. You spend 30 seconds at the end of every day and it sustains itself. Another thing we've been really learning from our discussions with Lean Portland, it's kind of common sense, but the more you talk about it in a group, the more you get a common language, the more you're able to really focus on it. And it's the concept of pushing or pulling your materials and inventory. So Free Geek gets a lot of stuff in the door, like the rebuilding center, like scrap, I'm sure, and a lot of staff, the idea is like, we got a VCR. We know how to test a VCR. Let's test it. Let's send it to the store. We were finding that maybe we were testing too many VCRs, and 10% of the store's inventory was VCRs, and they weren't selling very quickly. And so with Lean, we started talking about how do we change from like, let's build everything that comes into the door, to let's find out what we can actually sell. What do our customers really want? And so, of course, they want VCRs, but they want one or two a month. So we'll build one or two VCRs a month. The rest we'll recycle responsibly. I have Movie Madness up here because that's been a great opportunity from the pull side of things. There's a demand for VCRs. Movie Madness is renting out VCRs or selling them along with the VHS tapes they're still preserving. So they came to us and we were able to provide them like 50 VCRs. But we don't need to provide 50 VCRs every month, so it's helped save a lot of wasted time in just inventory space. It let us free up a lot of space in the store for higher value items, and our staff can focus on what do we need to build today to fill the needs of the store, rather than we're buried under piles of stuff. You know, let's try to build it all. So just the language around push and pull has really helped us in a lot of departments around. We're building the right things. Our store has a lot of bright, shiny computers that fly off the shelves, partly because we decided to focus on the ones that we're selling rather than the last one that came in the door. Then the last thing I really want to talk about, where I'm kind of in the middle of right now, is the idea of a daily management system or a huddle board. It's the idea that there's a lot of stuff going on, and staff maybe know best what the problems are of the day. So it saves me as a manager from having to try to track everything and kind of lead every discussion. So we went to the staff and we asked, you know, what really matters to you on a daily basis? And they're very concerned that volunteers are having a good experience, that volunteers are learning something, getting challenged if they want to be challenged, and going home happy. And we're not really tracking that in a meaningful way, so we're going to start doing that. Of course, staff want to make sure that when they come in the morning that they have a nice clean place and they're not left with yesterday's problems. And I've always worried about that, but now that staff are engaged, they can kind of self-report and encourage each other, and we'll track it over time. And balancing out staff stress, you know, some days are better than others, and the more maybe we can map that on a calendar and say, well, Thursdays are terrible, according to staff, so what can I do to make Thursdays better, and maybe Wednesdays can be a little bit worse if we don't have more resources to move to. So it's going to help us see trends and track issues, and this starts with the staff, and I'm going to include it in my monthly report to other managers and then to the board. So it's also giving me important data, but it's really driven from what the staff are looking for as well. And the more they're talking about this stuff, the more they're able to innovate with their own incremental improvements, and it empowers them to kind of make those changes. And if they don't have time to do it on the spot, there's a place for them to record within the system, like, here's a problem we need management support from, and then I'm even more accountable to them. So, thanks for your time, and thanks to Lean Portland. It's been a great partnership.
Sweet. Hey, everybody. My name is Justice. All right. Hey, everyone. My name is Mike Alfoni. I'm with the Rebuilding Center. How many folks have heard of the Rebuilding Center? Okay, that's usually a question where I expect a few hands in an audience. It's kind of cool. I think it was almost all of them. Unfortunately, my co-presenter could not join me today. So thank you in advance for understanding if I have to backtrack a little bit. Is there anybody here in the audience who has a loud voice? Could you raise your hand? Can I ask you to volunteer to yell out too quiet or too fast if I'm starting to mumble or babble? Thank you very much. Continual improvement. How does this thing work?
Right-click.
Is it the right-click button? Awesome. Nice. All right, so thanks. Thanks to Lean Portland, thanks to the association, thanks for everybody for being here, thanks for my coworkers for being awesome. Again, I'm Mike Alfoni. My title is Project Manager. Brian Holt couldn't join us today, which is unfortunate because the whole story is sort of about him at the end here. My role at the Rebuilding Center is to some degree, to bring reuse into the 20th century. I'm dual tracking human and technology systems, so building a more formal next step business model for reuse. What I'm working on is now is everything from process improvement on the physical systems to building a back-end database and point of sale system and inventory system so we can track our inventory in real time online, in-house, so if someone calls and asks if we have something, we know if we have it there then that minute, and the minute we sell it, it goes away. We'll be working with other reuse organizations on similar systems. We're partnered with Construction Junction in Philly, who developed a lot of it. And the ultimate goal is to do something like create the Amazon of reuse, where there's an interconnected network of reuse organizations who have digitized inventory and lean systems that work really well to process very complicated materials logistics. In other words, I spend half my time moving little nuts and bolts and pieces of wood around, the other half I'm stuck in front of a computer programming. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the process improvement side. It's been great working with the Lean guys. My background's all over the map. I've done everything from work for Intel to run a nightclub to be a machinist to elect a couple people to office. A lot of what I've worked in is data and efficiency and systems. And reuse, I'm telling you, is the hardest thing that I have ever worked on. It's really complicated stuff. So many different objects, so many different things happening, and so many different qualities. It's really challenging, and I'm amazed by the work everyone has done in this industry. And at the Rebuilding Center, the plan here was to kind of dial in what's next for how we do stuff. Now, we've been around for about 20 years. We helped catalyze a lot of the market for reuse on the retail side in the area and in deconstruction, along with a lot of others. And that market's growing due to a lot of great work by a lot of people. But the thing that I heard over and over and over again is the question that's come up earlier is, like, how do we make things stick? How do we get process improvements to be, like, developed and then work and then stick around and not get, like, put aside for another system or half completed and left for the next exciting project? It's a really hard question at any organization. So the general plan was to get clear, get everybody to agree on what the situation is, what a solution might be, set out a plan, get organized for how to implement it, and then get moving. So implement whatever the minimum system is to actually test if it works. And then to do the same thing, get clear, test the system, get feedback from everybody, have everybody buy in, get organized, revise the system, and then get moving and implement those changes, and then repeat over and over and over and over again. I think this is known as continual improvement in lean language. So my goal here was to be like, okay, I can help catalyze this. People, the number one thing we heard through staff surveys, through me just going out and asking every single person is like, I wish we could all do things one way and I wish we could stick. I wish we were all on the same page because there's a lot of really smart people in this building. There's a lot of incredible talent and expertise at the Rebuilding Center. And sometimes we get, I think as in any organization, a little frustrated with each other when things are done in five different ways, especially when you're working with 50,000 different unique items coming in the door, you know, every month or so. So goal here was to start small, start somewhere little, and show success. Show what this could look like if the system is worked, rigorously tested, there's people are buying into thing, and then catalyze and sustain those process improvements that go out and then do sort of a do one, show one kind of model, and then catalyze that across the organization and hopefully play assistant to everybody in process improvements. So by sort of working with a small team and improving one area, we can show what it looks like to stick and then hopefully catalyze that and everybody's thinking across the team. So the question here we started with that I start with at the beginning is this doorknob, where does this go? I actually have the doorknob with me. Turns out this is a great place to start. We started at hardware. So goal one, start small. We decided to start in the hardware. This is our hardware sorting room. It's piles of buckets of hardware. There were three different places in that room for lighting to go as well, and three different systems in place, plus a fourth in another part of the building. Hardware's all over the building. It's piling up on carts. It's tons of little items all over the place, all over the building. So starting small in an area that's like not our big product is hardware. Turns out that in this room, that as we're cleaning it out, we're finding inventory from 2011 still sitting in this room, waiting to be sorted. Anybody run a retail operation here in reuse? How many of you have experienced similar things? It's pretty common, right? I know I just heard this, like this VCR has been sitting here for 20 months. What's the system to get rid of it? Right? Because we're not in the business of trashing things. We're in the business of finding new lives for things. So, starting small, we're starting with many, probably tens of thousands of different items in hardware, which come in with no labels and are varying quality, like doorknob. They're individually low value items and they're fairly low priority for the organization. In addition, they arrive at unpredictable times, getting dropped off from deconstruction sites, from customers in two different locations, and in quantities that are completely unrelated to the demand of them. I have so many shower heads sitting at the Rebuilding Center right now. If anybody needs a shower head, please come by. Our hardware, these tens of thousands of items that are unidentified, of low value, that are all over the place, arriving in bulk quantities, and then nothing, and then tons more, and then a trickle more, are also processed by volunteers, which doesn't, you know, our volunteer labor doesn't necessarily match up with the quantity of stuff that's incoming at any given time, and every day is pretty much their first day, so they need to be completely trained on how to sort these 10,000 items. And they're going to 156 different places on the sales floor, as I last counted, in buckets and such. So, goal one, success, start small. In retrospect, I might have learned something here. Number two, show success. So we started on intake. We get these carts, you can see here on the left, is that hardware tends to pile up. These aren't the best example pictures, but hardware piles up in like cabinet-like drawers. It piles up in milk crates. It piles up in a lot of cardboard boxes, and it's like this high on every card. So we've got like this, I don't know, I think they're like 3 feet by 5.5 or something carts. We've got a couple dozen around the building, and most of them are covered in about an inch or two of hardware. So the way we decided to try out solving that was by putting recycling bins that were totally legally obtained and labeling them with a sign that said unsorted hardware. You'll notice that there's some there's an issue here with the little bin there. I don't know if people can see it. It's actually got a question mark that says I don't know. I will come back to that. It shouldn't be on that cart, which is another lesson. But from this test, we said one cart piled with a little bit of hardware. It ended up filling with four recycling bins on one cart. It added up to 3.5, almost every single time, 3.5 full, like 8-10 square foot flatbeds, equaled one cart with bins on it. And it turns out that we could eliminate 7 carts from the store. We saved 82 square feet in the store, a lot of which piled in front of what is known as Rec 1 lumber, our highest quality lumber, which always had carts full of hardware in front of it and now almost never does. Steve, would you say that's gotten better? Yeah. So, and then it's two less times. You're not picking it up and putting in the thing and then picking it up and ripping the cardboard box up and putting it back on the cart, bringing it somewhere. You just throw it all in a bin and throw the cardboard box away. So, success. Showing success. On the sorting side, it's like, okay, great. Here's some buckets. Go fill it with like electrical stuff. Go fill this one with like a rough sort of like general hardware, like whatever that means. And like this one's door hardware. This one's like lighting hardware. So volunteers trying to remember which of these buckets to like put things in. What's general hardware mean? What is this thing? Is this a box for electrical? Is this a cabinet hitch? What is this, right? It's very hard to train people efficiently on that. So if I'm doing that work as a specialist in this field, I understand this is like an electrical box, this is a hinge, this is a bracket. I understand what categories those go in. To train someone to do that work themselves efficiently takes about as much time as for me to just do it myself, or more time to train them. And part of our mission is to engage the community in this work. So although it is not like a loss to do that, it's not efficient from a business side. So this is one of our first prototypes, which is I put some holes in a cart and we made a sorting game. And this is a minimum product here. We painted it in chalkboard paint so we could try out different things. But we actually put the buckets in like billiard hole style, so you could just start tossing things into buckets. Later on, we added some visuals, like I think Free Geek does a great job of this. If you guys ever go by Free Geek, some great work of these visual boards of what is this, what is that. That's some next step stuff for us. And we started testing that out. So we get our rough sort of these tens of different thousand items into about 6 or 7 categories, including an I don't know bin, which was enormously successful in the testing. And we ended up with a color-coded wayfinding system for the categories of like our general hardware, our electrical, the I don't know stuff, lighting parts, breaking it down into 7 or 8 categories, one of which is my favorite, I don't know. And then there's also stuff that's too big to put in a bucket is my other favorite category. This then gets sorted again into the 156 different buckets of hardware that we sell. So I'll go back one. Nice, that works. You can go backwards, cool. The green general hardware here, like I put some pictures of brackets and such. These pictures are just a first run prototype that needs to change, but there's pictures on a lot of these of what actually lighting hardware looks like, general hardware. And then it's color coded into general electrical on racks that match the ones on our sales floor. What we learned here, and I'm not going to go into this third step too much, but what we learned is that if we take these buckets and we go out to the sales floor when they're full and dump the old stuff into recycling and put the new bucket out, that we have a push system so we don't end up with 16 buckets of shower heads because we're not throwing them away. When we fill up on new shower heads, we recycle the old shower heads that nobody was buying, so we can push out old inventory and increase the efficiency of the flow, the throughput of this stuff. Luckily, volunteers from Lean, which was awesome to have, and thank you again. This was really fun and really helpful, and some of our Building Center folks got together. We tested these systems. We got some, you know, we just wrote down things like how much time, how many questions are getting asked, like how many pieces of things were sorted from the unsorted bin into these like 8 meta categories, these 8 meta categories into the like the fine categories. And what we found in under the old system, in about 10 minutes, we had 61 questions of what is this. Anybody want to do the math on that? How many questions per minute that is? It's 6.1, by the way. I'm usually bad at doing that in my head, too. So that's, and then into the rough bins, it's 5.1 items per minute, I believe, per person. is getting sorted, 2.1 into the finer buckets, because they're a little bit harder to search through, and then and it was ranked totally scientifically an 8 out of 10 on how frustrating was this. So in the new system, and this was without the visuals, without the wayfinding, this is sort of a prototype level, we got down to 20 questions, so that's a pretty significant improvement. 8.3 items per minute, again, about two-thirds better. A little more than two-thirds better for the fine items, and frustration cut in half. So for process improvement, I mean, these numbers are astronomical. Like, you know, usually when I'm improving something, I'm pretty happy with 5, 10% margins, 20% is mind-blowing. Like, this was really impressive. And part of it was because, like, a lot of this was developed by a few of the people who work with hardware, asking a lot of questions over a really long design process. So really grateful for the expertise of my colleagues on this, because what I tried to do was just write it down and take people's ideas and assemble them. And this is what our instructions look like now for the first two steps. There are virtually no words except for what the words are on the bins in our instructions. It's a great training tool. It's been really helpful. And it's a lot easier than walking people through every step of the way, pointing at buckets without labels on it, be like, oh, put electrical in that one so we can dump it into a larger bin full of electrical. And then we can walk out to the sales floor and walk up and down five aisles to try and find where the final bit goes. So catalyze process improvement organization wide. On the intake side, we have the number of carts. The sorting room was kept clean. We were nice and organized. It wasn't piling up for a bit. 100% efficiency increase roughly once we started getting the visuals up. This has been some very rough testing, but we've about doubled the efficiency from start to finish on hardware throughput. And we know that we doubled the volunteer experience. We haven't measured frustration, but now that there's buckets with labels and we zip tied examples to all of them, it's actually pretty smooth with most of the volunteers we've had in there. And then on sales, because we're pushing stuff out so there's not like pile-ups on the sales floor, there's never empty buckets of hardware with 15 electrical boxes in back and none in front, plus we've had some good inventory arrive, we've seen about a roughly 50 to 100% increase in sales on this front. So, show success. Total failure. This thing was complete and utter failure. Because there's inconsistent use of the intake. You'll notice the I don't know bin was sitting on a cart out there. And then there was a little buy-in from staff. People were like talking to me about like, this isn't gonna work, these problems. I'm like, no, just trust me. Because these people weren't involved in the design process or were processing the donations. On the sorting, not a lot of staff buy-in. I'll get to just how little staff buy-in there was in a moment. And we've actually had a few volunteers in there. I'll also get to that in a moment. So hold on that one for a second. And then sales, there's actually no agreement on what caused sales. So I was like, look, we've had a 50 to 100% increase in sales every week, and people came up with it. Almost every reason except the fact that like these buckets seem to be more full to me and that they were better organized and that hardware's coming through. So all of the success was in my head. which if you could probably pick up from these guys, that's not success according to Lean or really anybody working in a business. So here's where I screwed up. And this is where I was gonna hand it off to Brian. Brian's a salvage specialist, but I'm gonna keep going, so bear with me. Getting clear and testing this thing together. There were some plan rolls out. I did some PowerPoints. I did some showing off with the whole staff, but like we never all sat down and identified the problem together. We never all sat down and brainstormed together. And my whole goal of having this perfect little test with just a couple of people involved in hardware was absolutely the wrong idea, because there's a whole supply chain involving the lumber yard, involving our donations area where hardware shows up and getting through, and we didn't design the process together. I ended up becoming the jerk, like, admin guy who, and this is in my own head, no one said this to me, I hope they weren't thinking it, but I wouldn't blame them, is like, I'm the dude in an office behind a computer who's coming in telling people how to do their jobs better, even though that was never my intent. That's the result of how that looks is the result of a little bit how this looked. And then we didn't test it together. And then we never got to repeat, honestly, because, as you can see what the hardware sorting room looks like, it's starting to look again like it used to. So the system didn't stick. And so my goal here was to come play the boogeyman and hand it off to Brian here. Because what Brian did is I heard through our warehouse manager that Brian, our salvage specialist, was going to go in, was knocking down the wall behind all this and clearing out space to redo the hardware thing. And I'm like, you know, as a process improvement, like, expert, as someone who's wanting to catalyze this in the organization, Of course, my reaction immediately about someone going in and taking ownership over the system was unbridled rage. And then I got over it, and I was like, okay, this is actually what I wanted. I wanted everybody but me to be coming up with the ideas, and I want to support that work. And then I'll walk around the blocks a few times, get over my own ego. I talked to Brian, and then we called a meeting. And Brian said to me, and I thought Brian was just like pissed off, like that this was a mess, and he like wanted to invent a new system and just assumed that this one was terrible. Well, I didn't ask again. And so when I did ask, I got this from him, is that he had volunteers in there that said, so it was a school group, it was a teacher and some kids, that said, we can't work in here, it's too dirty. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't do this well at all. So there you go, is that part of our mission is to engage people in reuse, and it's a huge part of our mission, and then part of my mission is to help catalyze process improvement. So I said, okay, what do you want to do? So together we came up with a plan. This is our plan partway through. We're using a basic stoplight system. We identified all the solutions together, what the problems were, what the unknowns are, wrote down the steps and who's doing them, and we've got like a red, yellow, green, well, and I use some orange in here too, because I like overcomplicating things, of how far we are in each step. This is also taped up in the area. We meet every 2 weeks now as a team to talk about this, and we're gonna work on it together, and we're continuing to work on it together. And this is where I'd want Brian to come talk about this and why he was doing this and his knowledge. Something that we co-developed here together. Getting organized, this is a picture of a fish gutting knife that we found, and you can't really read the wall, but it's like, put asbestos here, is what it says on the wall. So we knocked down the old room, we knocked down a wall to make more space to build a new system, and when I talked to Brian, it turns out he did get the system, he just thought it wasn't going to work, but he's like, heck, I'm willing to test it if you're willing to make space. So I'm like, heck, I'm willing to do anything you want if you're willing to, you know, jump in and play leader on this. So, we started getting moving. We started clearing it out with our plan. You can see one of our wayfinding racks with plumbing is already in the back there. And we've got a room cleared out, except it's not cleared out. And this is where we ran into another issue, which is we can't work in there. Like someone came back to the room that we like co-developed and we're like working on and clearing out together and put a bunch of boxes in there because it was convenient. Yeah. So, prototype in progress. There's no happy ending to this yet, although I suspect that together we'll find it. But this is what I wanted to show everybody is when like lean works and like, you know, we've seen some great examples of that. I wanted to come up here and talk about like, when you think you're doing the right thing, it's great to ask yourself the question and more importantly, ask everybody else around you the question of, is it working and is this what we should be doing? So we should have started small. Should have shared the success to begin with, and that both developing it and the not just telling people like, look, it's working, but like having people measure it themselves, come up with the measurements themselves, and owning it, and then empowering everybody better. And you know, all of this was done with the best intentions, and it didn't turn out well. As we all know, intentions are only part of the thing; it's doing it the right way. And then get clear, get organized, get moving, repeat. These are the things that like are absolutely fundamentally working well already in other areas. I'm running around taking notes for other groups of people. Thank you, Steve and Lumberyard crew. Right now I'm playing assistant. Like I'm buying people like dinner when people are staying like to do process design. I'm taking notes on what they need, trying to keep my mouth shut and not offer suggestions. And I feel like I'm more useful not trying to help other than that kind of stuff right now in the organization. So, to be determined where it all goes, I suspect it's great places, but by getting clear together and then testing it together and getting organized, setting out a basic plan of action, and then doing the work together and continually checking in, I'm already seeing a lot more success in being able to help everybody than before. So, thank you very much, and it looks like you guys have
fun fact about Mike, he was the second place winner in Scrubs Robot and Monsters art competition with his sculpture. He had a little tiny dog robot. So we're going to have Pete going around with questions, so if you could raise your hand so Pete can see you.
That was remarkable. In any of these lean workshops or working together, has the solution ever been, why aren't you trying this software package?
Yeah, that comes up all the time. And so usually the answer is, let's figure out what's going on first before we start looking at that. And sometimes that is a good solution, but most of the time it's probably not. It's a quick solution for something, but usually just throwing another, just a solution that we haven't really uncovered what the problems are yet. So we really want to back up and say, make sure we understand the problem first before we start then deciding if we have a solution there. But I'm going to hand it to John too, because we have had some discussions on software.
Sure, yeah, software is an important piece of what we're doing, but it suffers from all the same problems we've been discussing. If you don't have everybody clear on what you're trying to solve, getting buy-in for what you need, how you're going to use it, then you get the software and nobody uses it. So we're in the middle of that, and it's very promising, but it's a slow, tedious process.
Mike, did you have something?
Yeah, so I can answer something very specifically there in that like my job, full half of my job, if not more, is to implement software at their building center, and most of my job has been trying desperately to eliminate as much software as possible. One of my colleagues came up to me and was like really jived on like redesigning part of our building and the materials flow through it. And he's like, what do you use to make Gantt charts? We need Gantt charts. And it's like, what project management software packages do you want to use? And I'm like, none of them. Get sticky notes, get a whiteboard, get a map of the building, and go sit down in the space that you need to work in, because those things, like nobody's going to log into a computer, boot up Asana, check the like milestones and workflow, who you know is already working their butt off in a warehouse 8 hours a day. Like, who's got time for that, right? So I've found, and this has been true of every type of organization, both tech and like manufacturing organizations, is every time we try to add a piece of software before trying every other thing, it's been a waste of time and money.
Well, thank you so much for being honest about all the craziness that we deal with in reuse organizations. I feel like a kindred spirit, and like I am not alone. So thank you so much. I am the operations manager for a very small organization with a lot of moving parts. I joke and simultaneously terrified that we deal with everyone's junk drawers in the whole community, and so therefore we just have one massive junk drawer that we are continually trying to organize and make sense of. So I am simultaneously trying to organize several moving parts, and I'm interested if any of you have any suggestions on the tracking and trends, because that sounds like that's really important, and I am one to just jump in and do the work and then look back and be like, oh no, I know we've come a long way, but I didn't put a percentage to that. So if you have any suggestions on how to sort of maybe slow down or set up ahead of time, I'd love to hear.
Just as kind of a dialogical set of questions to maybe start to figure something out. Who is your customers? What value do they get? And then how are they either getting them value from that, and is that measurable? And you might be able to prioritize that way. Maybe not very helpful until you really roll up your sleeves, though. I don't have a silver bullet.
We all love those junk drawers. Well, thank you so much, panel. This was great. We appreciate your time. Thank you.